Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 25th of January. All things political Monday at 9 o'clock. Rob Farley is our guest. Rob is a staff writer for PolitiFact and a reporter for the St. Petersburg Times. He has been rating the president's promises a year after he has been in office. And the paper's been doing, PolitiFact has been doing an interesting truthometer, looking at what people have said about certain issues and whether or not those are true or flip-flops or false or half-true, barely true. It's interesting, and you can find it on PolitiFact. We have a lot to talk about this hour, a lot of things going on. There is a new poll that has been released today from Gallup showing that the president has averaged a job approval rating of 88% among Democrats and 23% among Republicans. It is a huge, obviously, polarized approval rating. We'll be talking about that. David Plouffe is back to be managing House campaigns and Senate campaigns. We talked with him a few months ago about his book. He, of course, was the campaign manager for President Obama's very successful presidential run. What about the promises that the president has made when he started office? Has he been able to fulfill any of those? Frank Rich had an interesting column yesterday saying that the master communicator has still not delivered a coherent message on his signature policies, not only refused to signal his health care imperatives early on, but even now, like congressional Democrats, has failed to explain clearly why and how reform relates to economic recovery. And what about economic recovery? You'll recall the president said last year that in order for him to feel as though he had taken on the economy and has been successful in stimulating the economy, that he would like to have seen the creation or saving of 4 million jobs. Have we done that? We'll be looking at all these issues and welcoming your phone calls. There's a lot on the table. Oh, and then we have to talk about the Supreme Court decision, too, with campaign finance reform. So there's a lot on the table this hour. You're welcome to join our conversation at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and the email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Rob Farley, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent.
When did you start these truth-o-meters?
Well, we started it back early in the presidential campaign, and the idea was that, you know, some of these charges, they fly back and forth so quickly and furiously, and you know, you've got these daily deadlines, and so people just report them, and so often they go unchecked. And so we decided we would start a website where we would fact check a lot of these claims and put them on a meter, have a little fun with it, and let people know which claims were being distorted and which ones were wrong and which ones were on target.
You're right. The news cycle is so 24 hours. Somebody makes a charge and then you're on to something else. And you don't have time to stop and say, wait a second, I'm not sure that was true.
It's true. I mean, and then that's, you know, we've got so much more news available to us these days. And yet sometimes we sacrifice, you know, those very basic things. It's old school journalism. It's something I think there was a real need for in the last campaign.
You say in one of your PolitiFacts that the president had said that, where is that particular one? The president said, we've created or saved up to 1.6 million jobs, according to the Congressional Budget Office, through the Recovery Act. I remember the president saying when he first started that he wanted 4 million jobs created or saved, whatever that means, and that would be an indication of success.
Yeah, although that's over some time. So this is the snapshot of the 1.6 million jobs was, I believe the deadline there was the end of September of 2009. That was how many they said that they had saved or created over that period. But, you know, those kinds of numbers come with some real big caveats. You know, are these full-time jobs? Are they mm-hmm. jobs that last an entire year? Or are they just for a month or two? Those kinds of things come into play. It makes those numbers a little squishy sometimes. But the 4 million number, as I recall, was over the entirety of the stimulus.
Do you think that the president, since the Massachusetts election, is working up some kind of massive job stimulus program that he will unveil at the State of the Union?
Yeah, you know, I just saw some news this morning that there was to be some economic stimulus kind of thing that he was going to be announcing today, and certainly fleshing out in the State of the Union. There was a doubling of the child care tax credit for families earning under $85,000, more money for child care programs, and that kind of thing. So I guess we'll have to wait to see what that's all about. But we should be hearing about that very shortly.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the White House was stunned? We're seeing a more progressive Obama in the last week. He seems to be much more front and center than he has been in the past few months. He must have been a little shocked by what happened.
Well, it's funny what will happen when you don't have the majority, or at least, you know, yeah, they have the majority, but not the votes to push things through as he would like necessarily. Certainly, we'll see what happens with the health care. You know, we've got, you know, a large part of his agenda was tied to that health care package this past year, and so it'll be interesting to see now what comes of that now, which parts are scrapped, which parts aren't.
And you certainly, what's been said about healthcare has been all over the place the last year. There have been a lot of lies, half-truths, possibilities. Good for you for keeping track of all of that.
It's been a lot. We hadn't anticipated how much of an issue that was going to explode into. And, you know, there was so much misinformation going around, particularly in the early months of the debate in late August, early September. If you recall, say, former Governor Sarah Palin's claim about death panels in the health care bill, that was a claim that we gave our lie of the year as the worst distortion of the health care debate for the year.
Mm-hmm. And it stuck.
It's you know, that image sticks around for a while. You know, we can explain as much as we want that it's not in the bill, but certainly the perception lingers.
Mm-hmm. The president spoke out forcefully about the Supreme Court decision concerning campaign finance reform. Is there anything he can do about that?
You know, I'm not sure. I guess is the answer to that. You know, the things that we've looked at with sort of transparency type issues. You know, he's had a mixed record on. He came in promising an awful lot on transparency, and some of those he's not lived quite up to. For example, he said he was going to post bills on the internet for a period of 5 days to let people you know, weigh them and weigh in with their opinions, that kind of thing. And that didn't happen almost from the start. The same thing with the healthcare debate being on C-SPAN or to be publicized. What happened, as we all know, is that when the crucial discussions came time for the crucial discussions, those happened as they always have, behind closed doors. He has some success with some open government things, but hasn't always lived up to his promise on that end.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of what Frank Rich said yesterday, the master communicator in the White House, and he is a master communicator, hasn't delivered a coherent message on his signature policy, and we have spent so much time on health care the last year. He not only refused to signal his health care imperatives early on, but even now, like congressional Democrats, has failed to explain clearly why and how reform relates to economic recovery.
And you're talking about the health care bill specifically now?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, obviously it's going to remain to be seen how this shakes out on the health care debate. You know, the one that we have, one of the promises that we have rated as stalled is the public option, because obviously that seems to have gone away even before the Massachusetts elections. Seems to have been cut. But you know, I think that certainly he needs to now come forward and say these are the things that are crucially important to the healthcare debate, and then, you know, draw a line in the sand and say these are the things we want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was very specific in his campaign. We have 35 promises in our database that relate to healthcare that we've got listed as in the works right now, because you know there was so much action moving forward toward that vote that now seems to be in question. But he was very specific about what he wanted to accomplish with the health care, and so much of that was in the bills that were moving their way through Congress.
So was the failure that he just wasn't front and center on television, on talk shows, saying being sort of the guiding this through, the guy who was the master communicator who was going to explain all of this to the public? Because most people, I think, when you look at how people analyze the Massachusetts election, or when you look at how people don't have a basic understanding of what's in this health care bill or the House version or the Senate version, it's kind of a muddle here.
Well, it's confusing. It's difficult. It's complicated. And I know that the president certainly had made several speeches about laying out very specifically what he wanted to accomplish with his health care plan. But it's a complicated subject, and it's easy to muddle things when people take pot shots at it.
Right.
You know, I think that he was pretty clear about what he wanted to accomplish with it, but that message certainly has gotten confused with the public, for sure.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of this Gallup poll out today, Rob? These numbers are amazing. Obama averaging a job approval rating of 88% among Democrats and just 23% among Republicans, just released today.
That's interesting. You know, if you looked at, say, Ronald Reagan, his first year, the numbers weren't so good either after his first year. But one of the things that Obama had talked about so much during the campaign was bipartisanship. And there hasn't been a whole lot of that on some of the big issues here, certainly with health care and the stimulus that were strictly party-line votes. And, you know, we dinged him a little bit earlier in the year when he talked about, he said, you know, we've got Republican and Democratic ideas in the health care plan. And there were some amendments that were offered by Republicans, but not very substantial kinds of things. And it was largely a Democratic plan and got very little Republican support. So that vow of bipartisanship and changing the tone hasn't really come to pass, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Supreme Court decision a little more. With the stroke of a pen, Charles Schumer said, tell me if this is true or not true or what, the U.S. Supreme Court decided to overrule the 100-year-old ban on corporate expenditures.
We gave that a barely true rating. We have a sort of a sliding scale of truth. And barely true is because it appeared to us as though that the Supreme Court decision may have gone back perhaps 40 years, but not all the way back to the Tillman Act that would be 100 years old. So we gave that a barely true. Probably not, doesn't go quite back that far. But certainly it changes the game with the way that corporations are going to be able to get their message out, much more so than they could have you know, just a couple weeks ago.
Changes the game as early as this fall, Rob?
I would think so, sure. You know, corporations can't give money directly to the campaigns, you know, in certain time periods, but they're going to be able to put out position, you know, their own message, and, you know, they should be able to finance that with as much money as they want to.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean for Paul Volcker to be all over our television sets the last few days?
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. You know, I noticed that on Friday, when the president announced that this new Volcker rule. So that's certainly interesting, right, where banks aren't going to be allowed now to invest or sponsor hedge funds and these equity funds. That's certainly not a name you would normally expect to hear in the American dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit more about this 60-vote thing in your Truthometer? You quote Joe Biden, who said, as long as I've served, this is the first time every single solitary decision has required 60 senators.
Right, and that's wrong. I think that probably he's noting that that's much more prevalent than it was, say, when he started in the Senate. But I'd have to pull the numbers, but it was only a smaller percentage of votes that had to go to cloture of the roll call votes. I think it was like 350-some votes and maybe 30 or so that actually were cloture-type votes. So not every vote has required 60 votes to get passed.
It does seem, and can you explain this to me, the Democrats have the presidency, the House, and the Senate, and yet the bipartisanship is fierce, and they don't seem to be able to move ahead well, on the issue of health care reform, which has certainly been the issue of this last year. Why? When you look at what's happened, they haven't been able to push through much, even with those huge majorities.
No, they haven't. And they have had really no success at all in trying to woo some Republicans over, as we've seen on that health care debate. And the same was true with the stimulus. They just have not had any progress in trying to get Republican support for some of those things. And in health care, it's been a strictly partisan vote, for sure. And certainly not even all the Democrats were voting for it as well on the House side. But no, you're right. There's not been any success on that front in trying to woo the Republicans. And you know, you need the 60 votes in order to overcome the cloture vote. So,
right. David Plouffe is back.
Pardon me?
David Plouffe is back.
Yes.
What's his job going to be?
That I have no idea. That's out of my range there. I'd be curious to see. I know that we saw a good bit of him during the campaign. I'm curious to see what his role may be.
Yeah. Our number is 800-486-8655. It's All Things Political this hour of the program, and Robert Farley is our guest, staff writer for PolitiFact. He's been a reporter with the St. Petersburg Times since 1998. He worked as a stint before that on the newspaper's investigative team and won honors for stories about the dramatic rise in antipsychotic drugs prescribed to children. We go to your phone calls. Barbara from Madison is our first caller. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, good morning, and thank you for allowing me to speak before I just burst a vessel here. I went from the highs of electing our first black president to the lows last week of how some highly educated people on the Supreme Court could do what they've done. I have to say, my husband, he and I are both 84, and he has worked tirelessly for campaign finance reform in this country, in this state, and to have this delivered to us as it has been, it's like democracy and our government has been taken away from us. It's like, gee, they really dealt us a bad card last week. And I'm just so unable to understand how this could be. There are so many contradictions in this country. I mean, when they would choose Mrs. Palin, who certainly has a lot of a charisma, but to think that she would be just a heartbeat away from the presidency, and to expect our president to wave a magic wand and push away this economic downturn that has been years in the making, that he's supposed to do this in a year? What is going on in this country? And another thing I want to say, I salute your guest. We have been so impressed with investigative journalism, and I'm saddened to say a lot of it isn't going on anymore because it's expensive, and I appreciate your guest.
Thank you, Barbara. Thanks for the call. Take it on, Rob.
I appreciate her saying that as well. As far as campaign finance reform, as I said, you know, earlier, you know, we'll have to wait to see how this shakes out. I know that there was some discussion about perhaps some Congress trying to step in and see what they can do. But we'll see where that shakes out.
What about her comments concerning investigative journalism? Let's talk about that a little
bit.
It's
a very good point. And I think anyone who's been following, say, the newspaper industry knows that, you know, there's far less people covering the Capitol on a regular basis. And there's just a far fewer number of people. So there's less people keeping, you know, an eye on the things that are being said and whether they're true or not, which is part of the reason that we stepped into the fray with PolitiFact. There's less time to step back and say, I'm going to take a day or two and check these things out and in a nonpartisan way report on whether or not they're accurate. And so, as I said, these things come so quickly, these accusations, that sometimes they just get reported and then people move on to the next story. And so there is that gap there, and that's part of why we decided to do what we do.
And do you have any recommendations for how the public, people will look at PolitiFact, but it seems to me as though lies about things need to be refuted immediately and need to be refuted in a widespread manner so that all newspapers and televisions, et cetera, are attempting to get the truth. That's part of their responsibility, is to find what the truth is.
Yeah, well, we're doing what we can. There's certainly other sites that do this as well. Factcheck.org does a wonderful job of fact-checking. CNN does some fact-checking. The White House stepped into the fact-checking game this year with their realitycheck.org, I believe it was called, where they tried to dispel some of the worst distortions in the healthcare debate. Now, we have fact-checked the White House on a number of times in healthcare, and their record isn't perfect by any means either. But that's something that the White House has jumped into as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how often you mentioned healthcare again, some of the things that you discovered in your PolitiFact, the Democrats' healthcare bills would provide free healthcare for illegal immigrants. That certainly is probably still widely believed. Provides free abortion services, probably forced participation in abortions by members of the medical profession. That also is still widely believed.
You know, it's interesting. That those two items came from a chain email that was written in August. I actually just did a story on that, and we'd seen it kicking around a couple months ago, but it seemed dated. And we kept getting, even up till last week, people sending it to us saying, could you fact-check this? Is this correct? At the time, he was referring to a House bill, 3200, that actually wasn't even the one that ultimately passed the House. But the staying power of these chain emails on the Internet, you know, they can bang around for months and months, and they can really spread awfully far and wide.
So there are a lot of those, Rob? Chain emails?
Yeah, we really fact-check them all the time. And we're always amazed at how far they spread, and the power of their message. And honestly, their track record on our Truth-O-Meter is woeful. The claims in a lot of these chain emails are amongst the worst that we hear.
Huh.
And it's been I guess this is a newer phenomenon we're seeing. But this particular one was written by a former attorney who now lives in Texas. He does some constitutional law courses via the Internet. And he wrote this just for some friends and family. That's how, you know, a lot of these chain emails start. And then they just explode and, you know, they passed on from friend to friend to friend kind of a thing. And the next thing you know, millions of people can see some message that someone wrote to just a few friends.
And what makes them believe? What makes us believe in something where we don't even know who sent the message or what kind of authority they have or knowledge? And what's going on with us?
You know, that's the danger of them. And you know, they're written oftentimes with the air of authority that, you know, gives them some credibility. Sometimes the people are who they say they are. Sometimes they're not. Oftentimes they're just an anonymous message. And, you know, we went through so many chain emails during the campaigns and dispelled some of the rumors that came from them. And there's still so many of them out there with the healthcare debate. So I'd be surprised if your listeners haven't all gotten some of these.
Right. Ken from Oshkosh. Hi.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi, Ken.
Two comments on the Supreme Court decision. I think, and unfortunately, that it's perhaps a little bit simpler than a constitutional amendment, but state by state, we should take away the ability of the parties to have the primaries financed by the states. They should pay for everything regarding a primary. If they want to have people selected for their party to run, then they pay for it. Secondly, reach into the U.S. code law and change the definition of corporations. Far simpler than trying to go the constitutional method.
And change the definition to what?
So that they cannot be given the rights of actual persons. It is, you know, incorporate, it is embodied. We are able to define what that means.
Rob.
Well, I will say that I'm not a legal expert, and so on that one I'm going to have to punt. I just don't know enough about the legal ins and outs on that to comment on.
What do you think the public reaction is to this? Do most people give a darn about it? Are they? We have a pretty sophisticated audience, and we got a lot of people who are upset about it on the lines here. Do most people know what that decision means?
I think my guess is probably people don't know exactly as what the law is today, but I think they care about who influences the message going that gets to them regarding candidates. I very much think that people care about what influences are being had on politicians through campaign money.
Right.
Absolutely.
It will be interesting to see how much money is spent in these next elections. It's so much money.
I've never seen the number go down, have you?
No. No. It's just incredible. All right, Ken, thank you very much for your call. Mike from Appleton is next. Hi, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. Question and then a comment. With regards to the Supreme Court ruling, my understanding is that in the past, before this ruling, unions could make contributions in an unlimited way. And if that's the case, then perhaps the fact now that corporations can make contributions kind of balances it out. And my comment is, the host here has described Obama as a great communicator. Well, I don't know. I think he's a fantastic speech giver, but I have my doubts about him being able to communicate, because to communicate is to clearly express an idea so that everybody understands. I think he's failed.
Rob.
This would be a good time for me to jump in and say that PolitiFact is a nonpartisan operation. We're run by the St. Petersburg Times, which is owned by, it's an independent paper that's owned by a nonprofit journalism school. So that's something, obviously, that we wouldn't jump in on with an opinion. But let me back up and say, as far as whether or not he's been effective or not, because what we did was we looked at all the campaign promises that he made during the campaign. It was a painstaking effort. We logged about 500 promises that he made during the campaign. He was extremely detailed, and probably that's because at the time he was somewhat of a relative unknown on the political front as far as his various positions on things. And so I think he wanted to give people a great deal of detail in his promises. And so when we look back now at a year's mark, we have about 91 promises that he's kept, with another 275 that we've rated in the works. Now, he's broken about 15, and about 87 are stalled, which means that there's been no action whatsoever and appear to be going nowhere. But if you look at, say, 91 promises kept out of 500 in the first year, with another 275 in the works, that's someone who's certainly, you can say that he's accomplished a number of things. And particularly when you say, look at foreign policy, for example. If you recall, during the campaign, he talked so much about drawing down combat troops in Iraq. And one of the first things he did after he was inaugurated was to lay out a plan for Iraq where he would draw down the combat forces by August of this year. And by and large, he stuck to that. And then, at the same time, he talked about in Afghanistan, he wanted to ramp things up there. And he said he promised that he was going to add two combat troop brigades there. He did that in February. And then, as we know, again in the fall, he added another 30,000 troops there. So those are some of the things that, he's accomplished and said he was going to accomplish. But, you know, when you look at sort of the bigger picture, he's had a number of successes. And as we know, there's been a number of things that he hasn't been able to accomplish as well. But for his first year, I think when people look at that, most of the folks that we've talked to seem to be impressed that he's had a fairly high number of successes for a first-year president.
500 promises is a lot of promises, Rob.
It really is. Well, I gotta tell you. For someone who logged him, it's an awful lot.
Right. For people who, for other presidents, would they make about the same number or fewer or more promises?
Well, we weren't around for previous presidents
right.
at PolitiFact. But my impression is that, no, we would not have been able to get 500, certainly from President Bush or from President Clinton before. I think, as I said, that what you had was someone who really wanted to get the message across about what he was all about. He had a relatively short political career before running for office, and so I think that there was an attempt to say, here's in a good deal of detail where I am on a lot of issues that are important to different constituencies.
And when you look at those 500 and the 91 promises that were kept, what do you identify as the most important kept promises?
I think probably on the kept side, those military promises were probably the most significant. As I said, drawing down the combat forces in Iraq and beefing up, the military in Afghanistan. He talked about focusing the attention on al-Qaeda, and that's certainly been what he's done on that front. You know, the stimulus allowed him to knock out a bunch of his promises as well, particularly when we talk about green-type initiatives. There was a lot of money in the stimulus for weatherizing low-income homes and encouraging the production of plug-in and hybrid electric vehicles. So some things like that he was able to accomplish, even in tough economic times, through that stimulus package. So,
and those that he promised that he has not kept?
There's some of the transparency promises he's not kept, posting bills online for 5 days before he'd sign them, having the health care debate in public. To an extent, has not been kept, although we've seen, obviously, a good bit of debate on the floor of Congress. So much of the important debate has happened behind closed doors, as has always happened. Some of the other things that have stalled, if you look at, say, immigration reform,
yes,
that was talked about during the campaign, that obviously was put on the back burner in the first year. You look at, say, the don't ask, don't tell policy in the military. We haven't heard much about that, and that hasn't moved much forward either. We've got that rated as stalled on our meter as well.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. We go next to Glenn from Manitowoc. Hi, Glenn.
Oh, good morning, everybody. Also stealing my thunder. And a good question for Rod here is, two of the Supreme Court justices, I believe, during their confirmation hearings had indicated that they were not interested in reversing any previous Supreme Court decisions in regards to campaign finance. That, to me, is right now the biggest issue. I am an Obama supporter, and I am a progressive. I really approve, and I understand what Obama's been doing, and I understand what he's up against. But basically, as divided as this country is between the left and the right, rather than looking at commonalities, we're looking, focusing mostly at our differences. Right now, I would think that people that claim to be conservative should be incredibly concerned, because any politician from any party can be easily swift-voted when they're doing the people's business rather than the corporate business. Anytime there's any talk about putting controls on banks, et cetera, big money can go up against them in mock TV ads and Palin-type lies. And basically what the Supreme Court did is any states, such as Wisconsin, that does already have laws attempting to control corporate funding, and we're talking international corporate also, makes all of those laws in all of the states illegal and unconstitutional. This is really, in my opinion, the biggest issue of the year, and it's also was predictable. It with this, we've had 30 years of let's divide the people and get them at each other's throats, and they don't talk anymore. Mm. I'm angry, so pardon me if I'm not very articulate.
No, you're quite articulate. Thank you very much for the call, Rob.
A colleague had pointed out to me the other day that Swift boat commercial really didn't cost all that much money. So sometimes it's not just a matter of money to get the message out. Now that with this Supreme Court decision, we are going to see more money. But it's not always about money. Sometimes in this age, you can put an ad out with just a little bit of money to a small audience, and the media can pick up on it, and it can really take off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are concerned. When you look at where most people are, they're kind of in the middle on a lot of issues. The fact that we've got all this information telling us that we're becoming more and more partisan doesn't really bode well for this country. And I'm wondering what it is that's going to break that. We've got press now that are advocates for one side or for the other side. We've got today's Gallup poll showing the Democrats love the president, the Republicans can't stand him. We have health care reform not going anywhere because you can't get any Republicans to vote for it, and you've got some conservative Democrats who are concerned about it. It just goes on. You've got a Supreme Court that's 5-4, 5-4, 5-4 on a lot of issues. How do you break this logjam? Because eventually people are going to have to talk to each other for some bills to move forward.
Well, as you say, it's going to be a matter of necessity at this point moving forward after the Massachusetts election. I think that's part of the answer. But, you know, you talked about, you know, when you look in the media, that kind of thing. We decided this year, in addition to fact-checking candidates and politicians, that we also wanted to fact-check the pundits because they shaped the message of the American dialogue so much. And so we stepped in and we're, you know, fact-checking Glenn Beck and Rachel Maddow and folks from all ends of the spectrum because they are shaping the message so much.
How about Rush Limbaugh? There are high administrative costs when you donate to Haiti relief through the White House website.
We fact-checked that one last week and gave him I believe we gave it our lowest rating, which is a pants on fire, which is a ridiculously false, because the White House was really acting as a pass-through. It wasn't that you would donate your money and then the White House would do something with it and then pass it on. That was strictly a you would click on the White House website and it would direct you to places that you could donate your money.
Yeah. Let's go to Mike from Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Hi. Alice Charmer, Zayo Smith, Pabst Blue Ribbon, Square D, Caterpillar, Briggs have all moved offshore. And the reason is, of course, is because they can do business over there without regulation and with paying low wages and no pensions and no health care. So consequently, when the Supreme Court passed the law, which to me is just trying to appease those people to stay here, you want to create jobs on one hand, and then you don't want to give anything to the corporations for staying here. So there was a movie years ago called Rollerball, where the states, the nations of the world go bankrupt, and the corporations are the only viable financial institutions left. I advise everybody to go back and look at that movie. So consequently, corporations, I believe, are headed for world domination.
Rob?
I don't know what to say to that. I did not see the movie Rollerball, but I'll certainly go check it out. I think it's certainly fair to say that corporations will be able to use more money in the upcoming elections.
Rob Farley is our guest for this week's All Things Political, staff writer for PolitiFact, which is worth checking out if you haven't seen it, politifact.com. They're a truthometer. He's been a reporter with the St. Petersburg Times since 1998. And is our guest this hour. We're welcoming phone calls. Our number is, Mike, thanks for your call, 800-486-8655. The email address, talk@WPR.org. Second hour of our program today, we'll speak with a researcher who's working to ensure the future of endangered species through the banking of genetic materials through the expansion of a frozen zoo. Dr. Betty Dresser will join us, Senior Vice President of Research and Director for the Audubon Center for Research of Endangered Species. They're doing some amazing work. And she will be with us hour number two. Robert Farley is here this hour for All Things Political. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Or the email address is talk@WPR.org. I'm glad I reminded myself of the email because we have an email. Rob, I know Wendy from Marshfield says, you are speaking of a wide range of topics today, but wonder why there's not a report card on the Republicans. And I know that you do put PolitiFact, you put Republicans through PolitiFact, Truthometer as well. Why isn't there a report card on the Republicans and their role in legislation for the past year? What is their role in preventing bipartisanship?
You're right. We don't do a report card necessarily. And what we do is, we pick the items that we want to fact check. And it's, we're not looking at every single thing that someone says. And so we'd say, 50% of what he says is accurate. We more just follow the news and try and find out the things that people are talking about and then do some fact checks related to those. So when we talk about report cards, it's very difficult to say, this is how the Republicans are doing, this is how the Democrats are doing with regard to telling the truth on this or that. You can look through the fact checks and sort of pick through them and see on which particular issues people are distorting things. But when it comes to report card, we're really the ones picking the items at the end of the day. So it's not quite as clean as a report card like that.
How about this one, Rob? I'm predicting the Saints will not only go undefeated, but all the way to the Super Bowl, something that's never been done before. Bobby Jindal.
That's right, yeah. We looked at that. Obviously, there was the Miami Dolphins. I'm going to get their year wrong, and someone's going to call me on it, but I think it was 72. Is that right? I'm going to get the year wrong.
Beats
but the Dolphins went undefeated. As some folks pointed out to me later, that was when there was a shorter season than there is now, but it, still, he talked about them going undefeated, and Miami obviously went undefeated. After that statement was made, as we all know, New Orleans lost the game anyway, but here they are off to the Super Bowl, so
yeah,
hats off to him.
Right. I'm not a big football fan, but I must say that it was wonderful to see that happen in New Orleans. It just, yeah. It was very symbolic, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Rich from Sullivan. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Kathleen. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I don't know how your guest will respond to this in terms of survey results, but I was kind of surprised by the high rating among Democrats. And the reason is I read most of what Obama has written, and in one of his books, I can't remember which one, he says that as a young man he found out that there was no margin to be had in coming across as an angry young black man. And for some of us, we're concluding that he sort of, if the last president was the decider, this one seems remarkably unwilling to ruffle feathers and doesn't seem to have enough fire in his belly. I was somewhat offended when Jesse Jackson was heard over an open mic saying something to the effect of our boy here should grow some strength, we'll put it that way. But actually, I'm now thinking this guy is afraid of being angry. Those quotes from Franklin Delano Roosevelt about they say they hate me and I invite their hatred. Speaking of Republican opposition to a overall plan to get the economy back on its feet. Just comment from your guest.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but that's something that I can't weigh in on. I'll explain why. Because they're talking about some political opinion, and what's so important to us is that we remain nonpartisan in this debate. And so we fact-check items on both sides of the aisle. And we try and, as much as we can, show our math. We have links to all our sources, and we try and use original source documents to let people know where we've come up with our conclusions. And we'll make a call on whether or not we think something's true or not, but we're sort of very fiercely independent and want to stay away from just political opinions about stuff. And, so, and obviously what you're asking is directly in a political opinion that we try and stay away from to remain, you know, above the partisan debate on either side.
But you will, I would imagine, we're beginning to see some kind of change in the rhetoric of the president. Granted, it's short-lived. It's been the last week. But when Rich talks more about this fire in the belly, I think that he got so shocked by last week that he's trying to, you know, to hold on to Democratic wins and to his presidency in many ways. So you may, and right, I understand your position, and it's fine for us to just take calls to hear what people like Rich have to say, because, you know, that's what we do.
Of course.
I would imagine that you'll be checking some of that as you go along here.
We will, and it's you make an interesting point. Again, with this election in Massachusetts, you're going to find a president who's going to have to now get some Republican support for some of his bigger agenda items.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's going to change the message for sure. And I think that there's going to have to be some effort to get some Republicans on board, or some of his biggest agenda items aren't going to move.
Yeah, Rich, I'm interested in hearing your response to why you think Brown won last week. Are you there, Rich? Oh, Rich is gone. All right, thanks very much for your call. We go next to Dave from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Dave.
Good morning, good morning to your guest. Interesting show. Just a quick comment on the last remark. I think the Democrats' problem was they kind of assumed they had a lease on Kennedy's seat, and they took everything for granted, and they got what they have coming.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm happy with the result. But in speaking of corporations, the recent ruling by the Supreme Court is, as much as I find it despicable, is in line with precedent, because the problem was that sometime in the past that corporations were held to be individuals. The legal purpose of establishing corporations in the beginning was to provide for continuity of management and transfer of power on the death of those in charge, and also accountability to their stockholders. But where that leaves us now is that, for example, a labor union might have millions of dollars invested in investments in General Motors for their retirement funds, and General Motors can take what rightfully is part of their money and use it to defeat to obtain rulings against the best interest of a big share of their stockholders. And I think that's where the issue has to be joined, is to perhaps appeal that earlier decision. I mean, they're willing to overthrow past precedent. That's the precedent that stands in the way of any kind of meaningful result here, and also stockholder actions. But one other thing I think might turn out to be the case is that corporations have a vested interest in this country, and I think that within management of corporations, they may realize that if they go too far either way, and of course how you look at this is a result of whether or not you feel your ox is going to be gored, and that corporations may find it in their best interest to soft pedal that. I'm speaking of national and multinational corporations. There are a lot of small corporations that have a few stockholders, and or they're pretty much privately held stock, and they can go and follow their political wishes however they want to. So I don't think we really know how this is going to turn out, but the original purpose of corporations has been so perverted in that action years ago that makes you wonder how it's hung on this long.
Hmm. Thank you, Dave, for your well-informed comments. Do you want to comment on any of that, Rob?
Scenario he poses, that's something, frankly, I might like to look into a little bit.
Right, yeah. Luke from Appleton is next. Hi, Luke.
Oh, good morning. See, on your truthometer, going from, like, well, let's just say, like, 1 to 10, where 10 is the most outrageous lie, let's go to healthcare, for example. There was so much discussion and back and forth. Is there now there are many lies and, of course, many truths, but is there a lie that stands out on your truthometer as the most egregious?
Well, there is. We gave Sarah Palin our lie of the year when she said that the healthcare bill included death panels, where a group of people would decide who should get care and who wouldn't. And so we gave that our lie of the year. So obviously we felt like that one, not only was it wrong and got a sort of a pants-on-fire rating on our truthometer, it was one that was widely disseminated. That message really got around and stuck with people and resonated.
It sure did.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I should say, the president's record in the healthcare debate was not flawless either. For example, he talked about how the healthcare reform included preventive medicine and how preventive care saves money. And we looked into that and found that that's just not so. It might be good health care, but it doesn't save money. The amount of money that you have to spend on preventive care to save money in some cases, it doesn't work out that way. And so we've given him a false rating on that, and it's one that he's continued to say throughout the debate.
We go next to Mike from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Hi.
I had a This is thing. Are you checking internet people like Tom Hartman and Ed Schultz? Of course, was on internet, but now he's on MSNBC. But and blogs and stuff. The reason I'm asking is you had said just a little while ago that the Swiss voters didn't spend a whole lot on their ad because once it hit the media, then it got the exposure. But you know, with the downfall of the media, and I think that's is pretty evident, and it's going to happen. And it's going to happen shortly. As newspapers are closing, I don't think they're doing any reporting, real reporting right now. They're reporting spectacular events, similar to People magazine. So I don't think we're going to, I think spectacular ads like the corporations well run will be the only ones covered. The other thing is Tom Hartman has written a book called Unequal Protection, referring to the Equal Protection Clause in the Constitution and how that was meant to assert personhood for freed slaves. And the thing is that corporations during the Santa Clara versus a state of the
running
Union,
out of time, Mike.
The Santa Clara Railroad, they regarding that case, it was just a clerk who wrote an opinion on top of a cover letter on that decision.
Okay, we need to get a quick response because we're almost out of time. Rob?
You know, we have not checked anything from internet bloggers, but it's a fascinating point and one that we'll probably will be in the future because he's right. You know, someone on the internet can say something and it can be picked up and, and passed around, from Twitter or on Facebook. You look at Sarah Palin's message on Facebook and how much play it got. The internet is a game changer and the way that people will get their message out. And certainly we will be fact-checking people in the future who do internet blogs they're shaping the message.
That's an even bigger job for you. Rob, thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Rob Farley, staff writer for PolitiFact.com and a reporter with the St. Petersburg Times since 1998. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning as well for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with more Monday Conversation. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.